And I want to encourage each and every one of us here today that we all have the same call, that God has called us to love Him with all of our heart, to love our neighbour as ourselves, and in that journey to make disciples, to share our faith. And so we all have the same call, yet we all have different giftings. And I remember when Caleb shared a communion, probably going back a year or two ago, it was obvious that he had a gift of speaking and communicating. And so today it's his first time of preaching. And I'm really excited about that. But I want to encourage each and every one of you. You see, you all have different giftings, and it may not be preaching, but you all have different giftings. And as we go on this journey of life, it is our job to find out what the giftings, what are the things that God has placed in our life so that we can grow and develop them and use them to serve people and to serve the Lord. So today, we're about to hear a young man who has a gift, and as a church, we always want to help people cultivate that gift and develop that gift and encourage that gift. That goes for each and every one of you here. So, Caleb, it's over to you, mate. Bless you.
Good morning, everyone. How are you all doing? Doing good? Fantastic. If we could have that first slide up. Great. Thanks, Amber. Okay. So I wanted to start today with this verse here. Matthew 7, verse 7 to 8. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks, the door will be opened. Many of you will probably remember a communion message I gave a year ago on this passage. And in that communion message, I shared a story where I was looking for a book, a particular book, and went around from bookstore to bookstore looking for this book, and eventually I found it. And I said that this verse, seek and you will find, is a promise that it applies to everything we do. What we seek, that is what we find. And there's so much in this concept, so much in this idea, that I've decided the message that I want to share with you today is sort of like part two of this idea, part two of seek and you'll find. But don't worry if you weren't there last year or you don't remember it. This message is standalone. It's perfectly understandable by itself. Because it goes at comes at this idea from a different perspective, a different lens, if you like. And so, with that idea, well, with that in mind, I've decided to name my message for today, The Nature of a Journey. Or, better yet, what does a journey look like? What does a journey look like? Because often when we think of a journey, we think of sort of A to B journey, this kind of linear journey. Okay, I need some bread and milk, so I go to the supermarket. I start where I am, I go to the supermarket, I've reached my destination. Well, for me, when uni's on, a journey I often make is I catch the train from Sunbury into the city to where my uni is. These are the kind of journeys we often think about as these A to B journeys. But are our journeys in life, are they really like that? Can we look at someone and say, oh, look, they've got it all together. They've started at A, and they've gone to B, and now they're at a position, and they've done the hard yards, and now they're perfect. They're exactly, you know, they're finished. It's over. They can't do anything more. So if our journeys in life are not these sort of A to B journeys, then what are they? What do our journeys in life look like? And that's the question that I kind of want to delve into, I want to explore, unpack a bit today, this morning. So, many of you would know my sister, Talisha. Now, Talisha has always had a dislike for gardening, except for one kind of gardening, and that is vegetable gardening. She loves the idea of being able to plant something and nurture it and watch it grow until it produces something that you can eat, something that you can cook with, something that you can use. Except for various reasons, she hasn't been able to have the time to start growing her own vegetable garden. A few months ago, though, I went around to her place, and she seemed really excited about something. And she told me that Woolworths had a promotion going on that if you spend $30 or more, they give you a pack of seeds, a pot, some soil, to start growing your own vegetable garden. And so my sister, Talisha, she really got into this and started collecting as many seeds as possible, even to the stage that she's only spending $26 on groceries. So she'll look for something to, you know, boost it up over that $30 mark just so she can collect these more seeds. And so she ends up with all these different kinds of seeds and starts planting them, starts potting them by the windowsill. And she's got so many that she asks us to start planting some too. And so I'm there planting my own oregano, and James is there planting his own tomato plant. And Talisha's so excited about these different kinds of plants. And we look at the instructions, and it says that the ones that will start sprouting the soonest will take around a week to start. You'll start to see something. And so we wait. And a week passes by, and there's nothing there. Nothing has sprouted. It's still just dirt on top. 2 weeks roll by, and still, there's nothing. There's no sign that these plants are doing anything. Maybe they're just dud plants. Maybe the seeds don't actually work from Woolworths. But Talisha still keeps watering them every morning, every evening. And eventually, some radishes start sprouting up. And there's these five strong radishes that come up and start thriving. And there's like these two small radishes underneath it. And Talisha's so proud of these seven radishes that she's got because she's actually started growing her own vegetable garden. She's got something there. But one morning, one day she forgets to water them. In fact, it's not even a whole day, it's just one morning. And she comes back home that evening, and she finds that those five radishes that were doing so well, that were doing so strong, they've all shriveled up, and they're dead. And those two small ones, they don't look like they're going to make it either. But Talisha doesn't give up. She keeps on watering them every morning, every evening. A few weeks ago, I went around to her place again, and she seemed really excited. She said to me, "Come, I want to show you my seeds." So she leads me through the house to the back where all the pots are set up on the windowsill. And I look around me, and there's all these seeds that have now sprouted. There's oregano over here, there's dill over here, there's a couple of tomato plants over here. And those two radishes, the ones we didn't think were going to make it, they survived, and they're now doing strong, and they're thriving. I've actually got a picture of what they look like now. She's got her own greenhouse there, and there's a lot more, like, that's half the plants. There's another half on a shelf underneath them. And so often our journeys in life can, rather than A to B, they kind of seem something more like this. More like planting a seed, watching it grow, and being able to reap its fruits from it. The Bible also talks about journeys in a similar way. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul talks about an analogy of running the race. From verse 24, he says, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I do not run like someone running aimlessly. I do not fight like a boxer beating the air. No, I strike a blow to my body and make it my slave so that after I preach to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. At first glance, this analogy that Paul uses of running the race, it seems like an A to B journey, right? The runners start at the starting line, they finish at the finish line. It's A to B, they're done. But on closer examination, this analogy is a bit different. For a start, the race that Paul is talking about goes for the duration of our lives. It starts when we are born and ends when our life ends. And for that reason, everyone doesn't start the race at the same time and finish the race at the same time. It's not necessarily a time-based race. It's not like we can get to the end and say, okay, we've finished the race, we're done, it's over. But Paul says, run in such a way as to get the prize. It's not necessarily about running from a specific A point to a specific B point, but the winner is the one who runs hardest to the goal. And so what kind of journey are we talking about? It's not A to B, but it's something that's more like growing a vegetable garden or more like running a race, but where it's more important to run hard to the finish line as opposed to getting to some determined point B. And so I found a sort of illustration, a sort of helpful mechanic that I found describes this quite well. And it's actually a mathematical tool. It's something we use in maths and science. And it's something called vectors. Vectors. Now, for a start, it can sound sort of like a fancy term. It sounds really complex, but there's not actually too much to it. Let me explain it. Firstly, what is this a picture of? What have we got here? An arrow, that's it. And how does this arrow differ from this one? Yeah. The first one is a big arrow, is a long arrow, and the second one's a small arrow. And how do both these arrows differ from this one? It's going in a different direction, that's it. And all three of these arrows are different kinds of vectors. They all represent different vectors, because a vector has two properties. Number one, its direction. We're going up, down, left, right, north, south, east, west, which direction are we going in? And the second one is its magnitude. How much are we going in that direction? So in this, the arrows represent speed. So the longer arrow, we're going more in that direction. It's like I'm running in that direction. The shorter arrow, it's like, oh, maybe I'm jogging in that direction. And the tiny arrow, oh, well, I guess I'm just walking in that direction. It's the same direction, but we're going different speeds in that direction. So for example, you might, when you're driving your car, someone might ask you, how fast are you going? You could reply 60 kilometers per hour. But a scientist using vectors might say 60 kilometers per hour north, northwest. Because a vector has a direction, north, and a magnitude, a speed, 60 kilometers per hour. And so I find that this is a good description of what this kind of journey that we're talking about is like. It's not an A to B journey, but instead it's more like a direction and how much we are going that direction. I'm growing my vegetable garden. I want to grow my vegetable garden. That's the direction I'm going in. And how many vegetables am I going to grow? How much am I going to go in that direction? Or in Paul's race, I'm going towards the finish line. How much am I going towards the finish line? A direction and a magnitude. So the Bible actually talks about some examples that also do this, that also have this kind of journey where the person is rewarded, not for necessarily the point that they've got to, but the direction they're going in, how much they're going in that direction. For example, 1 Samuel chapter 13 describes David, King David, as a man after God's heart. He's a man pursuing God's heart. The attributes that qualify him as king is not a position he has got to. It's not, okay, he's fulfilled his criteria, he's got to a certain point, he's now perfect to be king. It's not a stationary position he's in. It's a moving one. He's moving towards God. He's pursuing God. He's after God's heart. Jesus also talks about a few different parables. In Matthew chapter 20, he talks about the parable of the workers in the vineyard. And in this parable, there's an owner of a vineyard and he's hiring workers to work, going to marketplace and sort of seeing who's available. And so he goes at the start of the day and hires people to work in his vineyard, and he goes throughout the day, hour after hour, until there's only 1 hour left in the day. And still, he hires some more workers. And it comes to the end of the day, and it's time for the owner to pay his workers. And the ones who started at the start of the day are expecting to be paid the most. That makes sense, right? They worked the most, they get paid most. But the thing is, it wasn't an A to B journey, how much they worked. But rather, they were rewarded for their direction, who they were working for, the owner of the vineyard, and how much they were doing at the end. Because at the end, they were all harvesting the grapes. They were all doing the same amount of work right at the end. And that's what they were rewarded for. Matthew chapter 25, Jesus talks about another parable, the parable of the bags of gold. And in this parable, there's a master who has three servants. And he's going away for time, so he decides to give his servants his money to look after. And so he gives one servant five bags of gold, one two bags of gold, and the third, he gives one bag of gold. And those first two servants, they take the one with the five and the one with the two, they take their bags of gold and they invest them in a bank. And when their master comes back, they've received double back in interest. They've got double the amount of gold. And so the one with five has 10, the one with two has 4. And the master says to them, "Well done, you good and faithful servant." He doesn't say to the one who has 4 bags now, "Oh, well done, but that other guy did better than you." He rewards them for what direction they were going in, that they invested the money, and how much they were going in that direction. They both received double the amount back. But the third worker, the third servant, the one who only has 1 bag of gold, he takes his bag of gold, digs a hole in the ground, and buries it. Because it's like, oh, well, it'll be safe there. No one will take it. I'll be able to give my master back his money, safe and sound, untouched. But when the master comes back, he says to that third servant, "You wicked and lazy servant." Because in effect, the third worker did nothing with what he was given. He didn't take the opportunity that was given to him. And in effect, he just stood still. He went 0 kilometers an hour. He just stood right where he was. He didn't invest the money. For various reasons, sometimes we can stand still in our journeys in life too. Perhaps life just gets a bit busy, or perhaps we feel we don't really need to go in a direction. Perhaps we're happy where we are. In Revelation chapter 3, Jesus is talking to the church of Laodicea through the apostle John. And he says to them, I know your deeds, that you are neither cold nor hot. I wish you were one or the other. So because you are lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, I am about to spit you out of my mouth. See, Jesus wants them to go in a direction, either hot or cold. But they don't. They're lukewarm. They're half-hearted. They just stand where they are. In Paul's running the race analogy, he says, I do not run like someone running aimlessly. It's kind of a funny picture if you think about it. Imagine all the runners lined up and the referee is there with his gun and he fires the gun and all the runners take off. But they all take off in different directions. Some are running backwards, some to the left, some to the right. The referee would be thinking to himself, what are you doing? The finish line is that way. Why aren't you running that way? Yet sometimes we can sort of wander down one direction or another, sort of landing halfway in between, being lukewarm. Jesus says in Revelation chapter 3, verse 20, here I am. I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come in and eat with that person, and they with me. At first we can be like, oh great, that's all we have to do, is just open that door. Open the door and he'll come in and it'll be great. But it's not an A to B journey. It's not something that, okay, we'll open the door once and have a good time and okay, now we've ticked that box, we've reached that destination, we can move on to something else now. Instead, it's a continual choice. It's something we can continually choose to do. Why else would Jesus say, come to me, draw near to me? He doesn't say, stand here and I'll do the rest. Because it's not a stationary position he wants us to be in, but a moving one towards him. Come to me, draw near to me. In our family, we have a cat and a dog. And our dog, whose name is Kinsey, whenever we call her, she comes up expectantly. She rushes to you enthusiastically, expecting pats, licking your hands, wagging her tail. She's so excited and eager. But our cat, as probably most cats do, we'll call our cat to us, and she sort of casually walks towards you in your direction. Maybe stops, gets distracted on the way. Maybe you'll keep coming. And you've got your hand out to pat her, and she's almost there, and then she'll just stop. You're like, if only you could just come a tiny bit closer, then I could pat you. But she's like, ha ha ha, no, I want you to get out of your chair, so you have to move to pat me, ha ha ha. Jesus stands at the door and knock, and he wants us to be enthusiastic. He wants us to be eager, like the dog, eager and excited and enthusiastic. But sometimes we can be more like the cat. And sort of just meander slowly towards him. I guess I'll come to church. I guess that's near enough. Yep, God's got his hand there, but that's near enough. If God really wants to touch me, I guess he'll reach out to me. Jesus gives us the choice. That's why he stands at the door and he knocks. If he didn't knock at the door, he wouldn't give us the choice. If he just barged straight through the door, he wouldn't give us the choice. But he does. He gives us the choice to go in a direction towards the door, to open that door, and a magnitude. How much are we going to open that door? How often are we going to open that door? Because if we don't worry about it, in our negligence, we close the door again. Matthew 7, verse 7 says, seek and you will find. Seeking is a choice. Okay, but it's not always that easy, is it? What if I'm not feeling it? What if it's hard to start seeking? What if it's hard to seek? We can shape our hearts, our emotions, our thoughts, and our feelings towards what we're seeking. And despite how we're feeling, we can still choose to seek. Seeking is a choice. okay, that's all great, but if seeking is a choice, well then, this question still remains. How do I start seeking? What do I do next? How do I go in that direction? And this is a fantastic question. This is a marvelous question. And the first step, the first thing to do to start seeking is to be honest with ourselves and ask yourself this. What is important to you? And it's okay, you don't have to tell anyone else. You don't have to if you don't want to. It's just being honest with yourself. That's what's important. It's not hide it from ourselves, but to ask ourselves, what is important to me? What really matters to me? Which direction have you been going in? Have you been standing still? Have you been wondering? Which direction do you want to be going in? Okay, this is important to me. I want to go in this direction. What is important to you? Which direction do you want to go in? But it's important to also ask yourself this. Why do you want to go in that direction? Because if the answer is, oh, well, I guess I should do it. I guess perhaps it's a good thing to do. And that's our only reason. Then that's like, oh, well, maybe I should grow a vegetable garden. And we'll just start with one pot. Oh, some radishes. Oh, look, they're sprouting. Oh, no, I forgot to water them. And now they're all dead. Oh, well, that's what happens when you grow a vegetable garden. It's because our heart's not in it. We're not enthusiastic about it. We're only doing it because we feel obliged, because we think we should do it. Why do you want to go in that direction? Perhaps you're afraid. Perhaps you're running from something. Perhaps you're going in that direction because you don't want to be going in that direction. And if that's the only reason, then that's like in Paul's running the race analogy. It's like you're running the race, but you're running it looking behind you at the starting line. And sure, you'll be running away from the starting line, but you'll have no idea what direction you're running forward in. You have no direction if you're running towards the finish line. It's not about what you're running from, it's about what you're running to. Okay, so what then? I've determined what's important to me, what matters to me. I've determined what direction I want to go in. This is important to me. I want to go in that direction. What's next? Next step is to be curious about it. Be hungry for it. In Hebrews 5, the Bible talks about spiritual food. And it says on our spiritual journey that for a start, we need more baby food. These stuff to help build up our strength, build up our stamina, and start us on this spiritual journey. And that once we've sort of eaten enough of this, then we naturally progress to more mature food, more mature spiritual food. But sometimes we can get to the end of the baby food, spiritually speaking, and it seems to end. There seems to be like there's no food left. It's not being handed to us. And we can think, oh, well, I've eaten enough anyway. I'm full now. I'm full. But in truth, the baby who is eating is ahead of you. Because it's not about an A to B journey. It's not about, okay, I want to consume this much food, and when I do, I'll be done. Rather, it's about a direction. What do I want to do? I want to eat that spiritual food. At a magnitude, how much of that spiritual food do I want to eat? Being hungry is so much more important than imagining you're full. Have you ever skipped a meal? For a start, you're pretty hungry. But eventually the hunger just goes away. And it's not until you start eating again that you realize just how starving you were, just how hungry you were. It's time to get hungry. Once we've decided what's important to us, what direction we want to go in, the next step is to get hungry for it, to be curious about that direction, to want to go into it, to get hungry. But you may be wondering, okay, if we're supposed to go in a direction and a magnitude how much we go in that direction. Doesn't that mean we're supposed to do a lot of stuff? Doesn't mean we have to do as much as we can? But the thing is, the magnitude, how much we go in that direction, isn't our actions. It's our heart, how hungry we are for that direction. When my sister was growing her vegetable garden, she didn't set out to grow as many pots as possible. Instead, she was excited, she was enthusiastic about growing vegetables, and because of that, she ended up growing heaps. The heart comes before the action. The magnitude, how much we do, is about getting hungry, being hungry for it. And the next step, the third step, is very simple. Once we've determined what's important to me, what direction do I want to go in, and we're hungry for that, we're curious about it, the next step is just this. Make a start. Start with something small. Be consistent. Because once we start with something small and we're consistent with that, we've started moving in a direction. We've got some forward momentum going. And now we can go somewhere. When my sister was growing a vegetable garden, she didn't for a long time. But it was only by starting with one packet of seeds, one pot, then she was able to grow the rest because she made a start. Start with something small and be consistent. Started seeking, and now you'll find what you seek. It's like having a small mustard seed of faith. But making a start is like planting that mustard seed, and now we can watch it grow into a tall and strong tree. And so as the band comes up, I'd like to finish with this. What do our journeys in life look like? They're not an A to B journey, but rather they're a direction. Which direction do I want to go in? And a magnitude, how much do I want to go in that direction? It's more like growing a garden than walking to the supermarket. It's a continual choice, something we choose to continue doing. You only fail growing a garden if you stop watering it, if you give up. It's a direction and a magnitude. The Bible says, seek and you will find. It's a promise. What we find, that's what we seek. Okay, but how do we start seeking? The first step is to be honest with ourselves. What is important to me? What direction have I been going in? What direction do I want to be going in? And then once we've determined that, it's about getting hungry for it, being curious about it. It doesn't matter if you don't feel it, because we can shape our hearts, we can shape our emotions and our thoughts and feelings towards what we're seeking, towards what we're hungry for. And the third one is just make a start. Start with something small, be consistent. And the rest will come naturally because we're hungry for it. We're seeking it. Jesus is standing at the door. Which direction do you want to go in? How much do you want to go in that direction? Jesus stands at the door and knocks. Which direction do you want to go in? How much do you want to go in that direction? I'd like to invite you all to stand. And just as we finish, I'd like you, seeking and you'll find is a process. It's a process. It takes time. It takes time, and to be consistent with it, to keep growing the garden. But I would like to invite you that if you want to start getting hungry for Jesus, if you want to be hungry, be curious about him, start going in that direction towards the door. How much do you want to open that door? And if you want to start, make a start, something small, something you can do right now, I'd like to invite you to come up the front. If you want to come out of your chair and come up the front and start seeking him, because if we start with something small, that can be the change. That can be the change into seeking him with more hunger, Because there's always more in God. There's always more in God. And it just takes a small start, and we can start seeking that, and we can start finding it. So I'd like to invite you, if you want, to come up the front, to be more hungry for Him. Be more hungry for Him. If you're curious about this Jesus, who is He? Or you've decided that, yes, I want to go in His this direction. I want to go after Him. I choose to make Him Lord and Savior over my life. I'd like to invite you up the front as well. And we can pray for you. Or if there's anything else you would like prayer for too. Let's pray. Father, I thank You for Your love. Thank You for how much You care for us. Thank You that You give us a choice, that You knock at the door of our hearts. Thank You that for this promise that what we seek, we will find. Father, thank You that You are so good and there's so much to find in You, that there's always more. There's always more. Thank You that You are so good, Father. Amen.